Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Talking Markets podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Our focus for today will be on equities, as my guest will provide his view on recent performance drivers, themes, as well as positioning across sectors. So with that, joining me for the conversation today, glad to welcome from our partners at Columbia Threadneedle Investments, his first appearance with us, Nick Janvier, head of equity for North America. Nick, as head of equities for North America, leads the company's equity investment team capabilities. With that, Nick, it's great to have you with us here on the Talking Markets podcast series. Thank you very much for spending some time today with our financial advisors here at UBS, our clients. Very much look forward to our conversation.
No, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be joining you and the team, and very much appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. And maybe to set the stage a bit, Nick, I know 2026 has gotten off to an eventful start as we're now moving into the latter part of Q1. So I would be curious to hear about your reflections on year-to-date U.S. equity market performance. What have you picked up on?
I have to tell you, this has been probably the most eventful flat market that one will ever experience, because if you look at the performance from a benchmark level, the S&P 500 is about flat year-to-date, call it 0.7% return thus far for the year, and the much-talked-about NASDAQ is down about 0.94%. So we'll call that flat, but to look at performance at the benchmark level and conclude that the year has been boring so far would be the wrong conclusion, because it has been an eventful year. And what is hidden under the performance of the benchmarks is the massive rotation that is happening below the surface as the market reassesses winners and losers for the AI trade, and the market likewise is focusing on the potential beneficiaries of a cyclical economic upturn that many are predicting we will see as we go through 2026.
Focusing in on corporate earnings for a few moments, Nick, it's timely that you're joining us today, February 24th. We are moving into the latter part of the Q4 reporting season. From what you've seen, what are some takeaways and reflections from Q4 reporting?
Thus far, Q4 reporting would largely be described as expected. We have not had any big positive nor negative surprises year to date. The expectation for 2026 is that we would have at the large cap level earnings growth something to the extent of 10 to 12%, which would be slightly ahead of historical averages, and that we would see an earnings acceleration for the small and mid caps, something akin much closer to 15 to 16%, which likewise would be ahead of historical averages. Thus far, Q4 earnings and guidance for Q1 leads us to believe that those earnings assumptions for the broader year are, in fact, just about spot on. But I have to tell you that the market, by and large, has not been reacting to earnings in the sense that stocks are trading up and down based on the reported earnings and the given guidance, but the market is much more focused on trying to shift through winners and losers as we continue to have this AI trade be in place in the broader market.
In terms of where equities go from here, from the perspective of the Chief Investment Office here at UBS, Nick, factors such as resilient economic growth, a supportive Fed, AI investment adoption, all factors that could support further upside in U.S. equities. Over at Columbia Threadneedle Investments, curious to hear about your performance outlook for equities through the first half of 2026 and the factors that might support your outlook.
We are largely aligned with the expectations that you just laid out from the UBS CIO office. As I laid out, I think our expectation is that we're going to have Nice earnings progression on a year over year. Again, to restate, something like the 12 to 13% at the large cap level and much closer to 15 to 17%. And we are fond of saying that by and large, stock performance follows earnings performance. So holding all else equal, the expectation would be that we would have quite a nice year at the benchmark levels, given the underlying assumptions. That said, I think there is the wild card is always sort of what happens with economic performance as we go through the year. Year to date, I think it's fair to say that the data points that we've seen on the macro at large, while steady, have also been volatile at the same time. And so I think as we move through the back half of the year, unfortunately, outside forces like the Fed, what happens with interest rates, what happens from a geo-macro perspective, tariffs are now back in the news. All of those external factors, if you will impact how the market performs throughout the year. But if we attempt to neutralize all of those things and focus on earnings, I think it's fair to say that the expectation would be that we would have something like a low double-digit return year for equities here in the U.S.
In terms of any notable risk considerations, you might have alluded to this, Nick, already, but anything in particular to be mindful of, factors that could derail further upside from here?
Yeah, I think the thing that is front and center is this reassessment of quality that is happening in the market. I know many of the advisors, you hear this term a lot, quality, quality, quality. Which is a fact, for the most part, has been shorthand for quality growth. And by and large, when the market says quality, I think from an equity market perspective, what people are focused on is companies or are companies that have fairly predictable and consistent earnings growth. If you look at the last 10 to 15 years, what that has meant is that those characteristics were largely represented in the growth indices and very specifically industries like software, the hyperscalers. Those were the places that were deemed to be quality. We are now going through a reassessment of that and thus the rotation that I mentioned, because as many advisors know, those businesses that were once thought as very high quality businesses now, by and large, find themselves in the epicenter of the AI adoption trade, right? And specifically for companies like software, in some instances, what this means is very real question about the future prospect of those companies. So, interestingly, as we sit here today, quality may very well mean old economy again. So think old boring industrial companies, think consumer discretionary companies, think energy, which is up 20% year to date. And what those sectors all have in common is that by and large, those are businesses that are not on the front end of AI disruption, but would be businesses that as you go through time and you adopt AI should actually help the cost structure of those companies. And I was just opposed to that with some of the software companies as an example, where AI could very well be an existential threat to those business models.
So in terms of where to put money to work, mindful of the current environment, valuations in some sectors, and mindful as well, Nick, you shared with us your performance outlook a bit there and some of these risk considerations. What looks most attractive to you at the moment to get a bit more pointed in the way of equity sectors? Where should investors be putting their money?
Boring is good again. Think old economy. Ironically, in the old days, value as a factor was largely correlated with one's expectation of the economic cycle. As we sit here today, that is still true, But value has performed well year to date because those earning streams in comparison to companies that are being targeted by AI seem relatively safe. So I would point to old economy sectors, more value sectors, things like materials, things like energy. And for us, the portfolios that we have here at Columbia Threadneedle, where those sectors are very well represented, would be in things like our select large cap value portfolio or our dividend income portfolio, as two examples. So, for the last 10 to 15 years, the world was all about growth and quality growth, at least in the short term, that seemed to have shifted. And I think performance will probably be found most readily in the value sectors as we move forward through 2026.
Looking outside of the U.S., Nick, I know you are head of equities for North America, and our conversation thus far has been very U.S. focused, though thinking about equities at all ex-U.S., any considerations there?
Many of the things that are at play in the U.S. are also at play in those markets. By and large, when you look outside of the U.S., those sectors and the composition of those markets tend to be much more value-oriented. So think the other side of why those economies and those markets have underperformed is because they have far less technology as part of their market benchmarks as we do here in the U.S. So from that perspective, I think, the European markets look attractive to us. We have quite a strong EAFE value strategy here at Columbia Threadneedle that year-to-date has done quite well. Japan remains an economy that is interesting to us. We likewise have our Japanese stock fund that has strategy that has done quite well year-to-date. So we do think that there's value outside of the U.S. And again, we've had this underperformance of those markets vis-a-vis the U.S., and we may very well be set up to see somewhat of a regression to the mean as far as market performance is concerned.
Well, Nick, I know we've covered a lot of ground for our listeners, our advisors today, and do look forward to having you back, especially at our podcast studio in Midtown Manhattan. It would be great to be at the table with you for a follow-up conversation. Though before we close out for today, Nick, any final thoughts, takeaways, or anything you would like to reinforce to our audience?
Yes, I'll leave the audience with this. I have been using an acronym, and I call it TIRE. Small T, small I, small R, but big E. And it's meant to sort of highlight the things that we think will drive the market as we go through 2026. So T is trade. We know that there is going to be continued uncertainty around trade. I is inflation. We know that that is still very much part of the conversation, which leads into the R, which is, you know, what are central banks going to do about interest rates and the like. But I like to remind people that while those things will create day-to-day volatility, it's happening with earnings growth. Ultimately, markets should follow earnings growth. And so while the year is probably set up for a lot of volatility, because we're going to have lots of headlines as it relates to the T, the I, and the R, the big E is what's going to matter. And our expectation remains that we will have a strong earnings year as we move through 2026.
Well, Nick, a rich and insightful conversation. Thank you very much for dropping by the Talking Markets podcast series here at UBS, for spending some time with our listeners, our clients, and as mentioned, do look forward to having an in-person follow-up conversation with you a bit later this year.
I'm very much looking forward to it. Thank you for hosting me. Wishing everyone a great rest of the day and a fantastic week.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. Speak soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.